At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to Bleach Boys. That was your Blower, episode 29. Now, you might be thinking, we've already talked about this episode. We've already seen it. What's 100%. There? What else is there to possibly say? Well, firstly, that's very selfish of you because Pythes hasn't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. So that's very rude and condescending.
Well, Sam, remember, we were 2-3 of 100 people that got to see it.
Well, we were at the time of recording, but now New York Comic Con has happened,
and they have seen it as well.
Yeah. So that's already happened. They've already seen it, and they even got signatures from both the voice actors, which I'm so jealous.
I'm so jealous. I wish we had the money to just go to New York and just
New
go
York Comic Con seems like so much fun.
It looks so cool.
I saw all kinds of stuff. Like, there were so many Japanese like voice actors, mm-hmm. manga artists, like all kinds of cool people that went to New York Comic Con,
but they don't come here.
No, I don't understand. I think. So, L.A. is huge. L.A., Hollywood, love it. Huge, big. You know, everybody knows that. I think nobody overseas gives a shit about San Diego. They're like, why would I go to San Diego?
It's not one of the big names. Mm-hmm.
Why do I care? But New York, it's like, ooh, okay.
Like San Diego Comic-Con does tend to focus 100% on, like, comics and pop culture. And, of course, they add a little bit of anime, but not.
I mean, yeah, Viz Media has presence there, but it's like you're never going to see any big panels about anime. But for some reason, New York Comic-Con really goes into the anime. I don't know if that's maybe their angle to make up for the fact that San Diego Comic-Con is so much bigger. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's their game plan, but I'm jealous.
I know. I would love to go to... One, New York, and then two, Comic-Con there.
You could do both in one trip. You go to New York for the first time and go to Comic-Con during the same time. That'd be good.
That'd be so fun.
You'd have to do at least a week-long trip because I think it's still 4 to 5 days is what you would do for the convention.
It's Thursday,
so you would still have to give up all those days, and then you'd have to have enough time to still see New York.
I just need like a day or two, you know, do the super touristy things and then out.
All right. Bleach Times Blood War 29. We got so much new Itake scenes. We got Aizen returning. We have Chad doing something, Ganju doing something, and Yoruichi's there also doing something.
Orihime?
She tried. She attempted. Well, really, they all attempted to really do something, and none of them were incredibly successful. Pythes, what did you think of the episode as your first time?
It was really good. I was shocked by the inclusion of the most powerful character in the Bleachverse, Boxing Granny.
Yep. just watched the episode today live with all of you guys. If you want to check that out, every Saturday, twitch.tv/weebsguild. We watch the episode live. I was watching it, I was like, bit weird. I feel like that scene with the granny and the guy walking through whatever, I forget what the name of the district was. It just felt like that was kind of a weird scene. Like, it didn't really have much relevance aside from, like, look how strong Ugutake is as a kid, you know? And then I was watching, I was like, you know, bit weird that they show the granny and then they give the granny a name. She's not just like a nameless character.
Yeah,
she has a full-on name. I'm like, okay.
And she's known in the district for being a little.
Yeah. Like, is she going to come back later? Do I need to learn this person's name? Like, that just seems a bit out of the blue. Jose, you say nah, but just you wait. That granny, so powerful, so strong at such an old age. She said, don't underestimate her. She's going to come back in the Hell Arc. She's going to have some long lost relative related to the Hell Arc. She's escaped it, actually. Maybe she was an escaped convict of the Hell Arc.
She's a direct descendant of the Soul King.
There we go. She's old enough that she's been
high. I wrote the lore as soon as I read her name. I paused it, wrote it. She's the person that trained Aizen.
Okay. No way. There we go. Perfect. Okay. That's it. Yep. I do have a question, though, and I feel like this is maybe falls into the realm of who cares, don't think about it. How does aging in the Soul Society work?
Well, we talked about Ginray, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of what I think it is. Because you see in this episode, right, we see Ugutake apparently 3 years old, by the way, which he doesn't look like any 3-year old kid that I've ever seen.
Dude.
Yeah. So he's 3 year old foaming at the mouth. And then we watch him go through all of it, but he grows into an adult and enters the Soul Reaper Academy. And then we see a young version of Sasakibe, which love him. We see a young version of Yama, still 1,000 year Blood War version. Normal version of Retsu and Hana. She already has
the braided hair in the
identical
front
to what we see now. And then they continue to age. So all of them do. Unohana, magical miracle potion,
she's
still
a
looking
queen,
good.
Dude. She's a queen.
But how many years in between are we talking here? Are we watching hundreds
like
of years
right?
go by?
At least 100, because Turn Back the Pendulum is when Shunsui and Ugutake are already captains.
Damn. Damn. So we're going back. So there's really, I don't know, like, has it ever been explained before in any Bleach continuity? Like, when you're a kid in the Soul Society, do you just rapidly age up to adult and then slow down?
Damn, it never worked for Toshiro.
Yeah, there's always one exception. Always one. That's what they say. He got glitched in the system and stuck as a kid. Okay, so never explained. We're just not going to think about it.
I can give you some like hard numbers that are even dumber. When Rukia goes missing in the world of the living, that's like right when Renji becomes a lieutenant. Mm-hmm. When he gets his promotion, he's having a conversation with Momo and Kira, where they say, hey, you should probably make up with Rukia after that fight. It's been 40 years since you guys had that fight. Maybe you should make up.
Jesus.
That fight back in the Soul Reaper Academy where they looked identical except for their outfits and Renji's eyebrows.
It's just so hard to calculate anything. That's, I guess I really do believe, and hopefully it doesn't come up in a Club Outside question, heaven forbid. I assume that just falls into the realm of please do not think about it. It happens.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. The answer, my official canon answer is don't worry about it.
Just enjoy it.
Yeah, don't think about it. It happens. We're all good. What else did we get this episode? So we got so much Ukitake backstory, which we talked about a lot last. We didn't really go too much into diving into exactly the events or what we think about it as much as we did is just talking about the events that happened. We get to see Ukitake's siblings, which I thought was very, very cool. I was watching the episode live once again, and the moment it showed Ukitake's siblings, someone was like, why is Ukitake the only one with white hair? I was like, dude, did you not just watch the episode? Did you not just watch the episode that's happened? I'm like, I can't explain it any further than that. It's like Mimi Hagi took his hair. I'm sorry. That was his one toll, was it took his nice black hair and gave him, which I feel like they refer to it as gray, but it's like silver, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's more silvery, but I mean, it looks cool.
Yeah, love that part. Love that we get to see Ukitake's family.
I wrote that down. We don't get to see his real hair color because his hair is already white when they go to Mimi Hagi.
Uh-huh.
I was like, shit, I want him to just be like a redhead.
Just a different colored hair, and then all of a sudden just gets wiped.
But I feel like we see, and maybe I'm misremembering it, when he's in the lake with Mimi Hagi, does he also have the hair? Because I think he has black hair.
He gets black hair, but part of me thought that he was reverting back to his old hair, but also it could just be Mimi Hagi covering him, because that happens right after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like he would just have black hair, but you know.
Yeah, I feel like he probably had black hair, and then he was just dying or whatever happened, and that's where it came from. Otherwise, he's adopted. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Yep, they found him on the street.
Yep. Well, it's the Rukan guy.
That's true.
They say they just pick people up and you become family. It's been well established since the beginning.
Also, can we talk about how cool it was that the credits came over like right when he was on the lake?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's loved it. Movie.
I thought it was so cinematic across the board. They did such a good job with this episode. I think all of the character interactions that we got, I mean, I cannot understate enough, still to this day, still when I watch it the second time, how much I love the Ukitake, Kiraku, and Retsu scenes. Love those scenes.
That scene with old man Yama's broken down Bankai and
everything.
It is
so good. I love Shunsui talking about that. Like, I wouldn't have had to make these orders if Yama was still around. Like, this sucks. He's like, this is crappy.
I wrote that shit down verbatim. We'll get there later.
All right.
Why the fuck? Kisuke didn't know about the Mimi Hagi, but Aizen did.
Yeah, I feel like it was a bit. I don't think necessarily Kisuke didn't know about Mimi Hagi itself. I don't think he knew about the Kamikake was the only thing that he said he didn't know what it was.
Yeah, he said he didn't understand the technique, right?
No, before that, when Ukitake's like, don't worry, I will become the thing that fixes the Soul King, Kisuke looks at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you mean? And he's like, never heard of the Mimi Hagi? And Kisuke is shocked. So I don't think he knew about the connection.
Okay, I could see. So I feel like that's very explainable. I can see Kisuke not knowing about the connection because he, like, the short time that he was a captain, he was so devoted to his own shit. You know, he's doing the R&D, he was focused on that, he's with Miyuri, he was Hinamori very quickly, and then immediately went straight to the visored bullshit. You know, got booted, goodbye. Meanwhile, Aizen got to stick around the whole time. had full access to all the research, was constantly creeping around doing whatever he wanted. So he had full access to figure out that connection with Ukitake and Mimihagi, where meanwhile it would have been much, much harder for Kisuke to do it. So I feel like I can see that one-up connection with Aizen, where it's like, okay, Aizen in that one had home field advantage. So I feel like Aizen would know that, where Kisuke was, how would you, I mean, it's such a close-kept secret. I feel like that'd be hard for Kisuke to figure out.
Well, Kisuke's the guy that knows everything, so I just think it's kind of cool that, hey, Aizen has, he has a one-up.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. That's true. And I do like when you think about it in the universe, like I was saying, it makes so much sense. And I like, because also Kisuke, you know, he wasn't this friendly guy, you know, like Hiraku. Nobody's going to open up to Kisuke and be like, Kisuke, I have this deep, dark secret. They're going to be like, dude, this guy's a freak. I'm not going to tell Kisuke a single thing.
Once again, I don't trust Kisuke for shit, even though I should.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes back to the time old thing.
Anything for the mission, dude.
Yeah, anything for the mission. Also, you know, rumor has it, he was originally going to be the villain. So you can see how that was going to go.
Someone correct me, but I feel like the original vision was he said Kisuke was going to be the villain, but I felt like that betrayal would be too much.
It would be pretty brutal. It would be a brutal betrayal.
Because could you imagine all these characters that are all already pulling around him right now, and if he was the villain, he could just kill them all.
Well, how exhausted would you be, like, if we still go through the same exact storyline, right? Like, we go through Soul Society Rescue Arc, it's revealed Aizen was behind all of it. Then we go through all of the Aizen arc, and then at the very end, it's revealed Kisuke was behind all of it. How exhausted would you be?
I'd be like, son of a bitch.
I'd just be like, dude, I fool can't me do once. This again. I can't do it. I'd be like, just put me out of my misery, Kubo. Thank you.
Well, I don't think they'd do the Aizen reveal. I think the reveal would be that Aizen was a good guy all along and Kisuke killed him, and Kisuke would be the guy in the chamber that Momo finds.
Yeah, boring. Let's double down. Let's double down on the twist.
Yeah, the Aizen twist is so much better.
It works so much better too.
Sam's fiance legit thought Aizen was dead. Like, if we take it back to that, she was legit upset that he was dead.
She drank the juice big time. Yeah, she did big time, and she was so into like Aizen's so cute. Like, yeah, he's just like, this he's nice so little sweet. Captain.
He sent Momo home. Oh, he knew something was gonna happen.
Hilarious.
You're just laughing at her.
Don't laugh at it. We all drink the Kool-Aid. I remember watching that shit on Toonami late at night going like, oh man, but he was so cool. He's dead. Who did it?
Yeah, same. I was just like, oh damn, someone killed one of the captains. That's
you can't really write something better than that. And it's almost like you don't expect the dead guy to be the one. You know, it's like one of the last guys that you expect, where you could very easily kind of look at Kisuke and be like, there's something up with him. Like,
he's,
you kind of get that
shady.
You get that from the beginning. You know, it's like he's kind of, there's something up with this guy. It would be much more obvious to guess than Aizen.
Why were Ukitake and Shunsui training with two swords?
Yeah, so I talked about this actually when I watched it today. It doesn't make any sense that they are training with two swords, because obviously we know they eventually both end up with two swords, so it makes sense. Like,
that's
they're training with two swords.
Early on,
well,
right?
Also, you recall, and I think this gets revealed if it wasn't already revealed, that one, nobody truly has two swords in Soul Society. Yeah. It's just not a thing. Ichigo is the anomaly for the fact that he has two swords. Everybody else is explained. Spoiler for the anime. I know some people are still not wanting to know this. Obviously, Kiraku's one of them is Nanao's blade that he uses to hide, and that's why he has two. And then the argument for Ukitake is technically they weren't two because they're connected.
Yeah,
because
they're joined by the chain, right?
So that is the argument. And same thing with Shuhei's, they're joined by chain. Mm-hmm. So they can be considered one unit. Two separate blades is never really supposed to happen, so it doesn't make any sense that they're training with two blades. It obviously makes sense what we know now. So I thought that was interesting. It's cool that they're training with two blades. Maybe they're just learning, like,
maybe
they
just
learn
preparing
all
in case
they learn
they
all the
to.
Styles. Yeah. I'm sure maybe they learn the same thing, like hitting with two hands on one sword, like Kenpachi did, the regular style, and then this dual wielded style, just in case.
That was when Old Man Yama was more like hands on training, and was just like, hey, just in case, here's two swords.
Well, that's a good point as well. Old Man Yama, we saw he was in his younger form, so he was probably more barbaric back in the day. You know, he was still like, listen, there might be a time where you're gonna have to pick up a dead comrade's sword, and you need to learn how to use both. Like, you know, you got to go Anakin Skywalker on somebody. You better be ready to do it.
Pull them both out.
Yep.
Those two, they were from the first generation of graduates from the Soul Reaper Academy. They could have just phased out the two weapon training later on.
True.
But I'm wondering, do you think that Yama and Chojiro and Retsu were let in on each of their secrets? And that's why they were training with two swords?
let's see. Would they have known back then? I would assume that they probably had some inkling. You know, I'm going to dismiss my boy Chojuro. I think this would be upper level sort of secrets. But I would assume both Retsu and Yama, with the knowledge that they have in the fights that they've seen, and I'm sure all of the brutal battles they've been in, same way with Kyuraku, they would have knowledge of Mimihage, that this being a deity that exists in one of the Rukongai districts, and they would have the same reaction from seeing Ukitake and seeing that he is like literally always sick and he's never ever getting better or worse. I'm sure that they could have a little bit of an inkling, and I would be surprised if that didn't come up, especially with him becoming eventually captain. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that those two in particular would probably know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, let's not forget that, like, the primary physician that takes care of Ukitake is Unohana.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I feel anything Unohana would know would go straight back to Yama. Yama would probably know prior to allowing anything happening. My question that is semi-related to this is, who became captain first? Was it Shunsui or was it Ukitake?
Maybe they became captain at the same time.
But they would both have mastered Bankai by then? Or was that not a, requirement?
I would assume the Bankai requirement has been a thing since the days of old. Right? I assume that's the basic requirement that's been there since day one. So with that in mind, I mean, who was first? Were they both done at the same time? You know, how'd it go?
When were they both like, I should probably use two swords? Like themselves. Shunsui was planning to use two from the beginning so he could hide the Nanao sword. Mm-hmm. But was Ukitake just like, I bet I could just swing two?
Maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's the reason why they were doing it.
Let me try it.
Well, maybe Kyuraku, since day one, was dual wielding, and he obviously has an in lore reason for it to be happening. And Ukitake was already said to be watching him at all times. So maybe when they came together for their first 1v1, Ukitake's like, I'm going to be an asshole and also dual wield. Like, I'm going to show him up in his own sport. And that's where we picked up from.
Well, we call that the Sam special.
The Sam special.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how can I be as disrespectful as possible? I'm going to dual wield. It's like, here
I
we go.
I can do anything he can.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting to think. And I am really interested to know who became captain
Someone's
first.
Someone's going to ask Kubo on Club Outside.
That's actually a great question. I would totally, I'll look into that. I will totally ask. Yeah. I'll see if I can ask that. I think that's a really great question. I think that is one that he would probably answer with like a throwaway.
I think he'd be really happy with the way he explains that one, though.
He'd probably just be like, yeah, they both came at the same time. Like, okay, all right, I mean, I'll take it.
Well,
sure.
Hey, that's it.
Like, whatever. But he only answers one real lore question per every 5 years or something like that. So we're going to have to catch him on a good one for to Damn. Get the answer to that one. Yeah.
Speaking of lore, I sent it to you guys on Instagram. What the fuck? The Adonais name was just...
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I was just like, huh, I wonder if it's one of those things that he was just kind of like thinking of and then let the... Because it was in the anime, right?
Well, let's wind it back here for people who might not have seen it. In season one of Bleach Thousand Year Blood War, we see Ryuken. We see Ryuken reading a like old Quincy text. And when the page is open, on the bottom right of the text is the name Adonais written in the book. Written bottom right, clear, I think in English too, like right there. Adonais. And that is season one, before we're in season three now. We got the name of the Soul King officially
revealed. He knew all along. Incredible.
And I think let's start with one interesting implication, is that Ishida probably knows exactly what's going on.
Make sense, because his texts are also really old, specifically because of his family,
I think, that, yeah, it's a passed down through generation. I think this officially, obviously we know, but I think this would confirm to me as an anime watcher that Uryu has full knowledge of everything, has mm-hmm. knowledge of what the Soul King is, has knowledge of probably what Squad Zero is. I think he has knowledge of all of that. Yeah. I truly believe that Uryu is completely in the know with everything that's going on, and he read that, and that is... As such, why he decided to take it on himself and like, I got to take
that. That's true, especially because Uryu did always go into his dad's study and look.
Well, he took the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took the book. We see him reading it under the bridge.
That's so much better of an explanation as to why. In the manga, Uryu, he's one of the Sternritter now. And then he's like, I guess I can fight Yuha or something. And that's about it. And this, he's like, okay, I know what's going on. I need to stop it right now.
Yeah, I like this a lot, and I love the little hints that are happening. I also love this perfectly sets up these silver stillness, the stillness arrow that's going to be shot later. Perfectly sets up why he would have knowledge of that, why Ryuken is looking into that, why he's trying to figure it out. Ryuken also knows what's at stake. He also is full aware. I'm sure when Ryuken heard that Yuha returned, he was like, well, fuck, here we go.
He's like, well, like, now I got to gear up.
Got to figure this shit out now. I love it. I love that whole little tidbit. I love the little tidbit we got of Uryu looking at the silver, or Ryuken looking at the silver in his hand. The little nods that he is doing to set up the Ishida family down the line is incredible.
I'm so happy with what they're doing right now.
It's so good. And it's just like, I was reading some of her comments and people were saying like, right now Bleach is top tier. 100%.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think, like we learned when we went to go to the fireside chat, when we were watching Bleach Size Above War, this episode, actually, mm-hmm. we watched it early. One of the questions was asking about Kubo. And one of them was stated, you know, what exactly, well, firstly, it said Kubo has seen everything. Kubo has like literally seen everything. But it was revealed that a lot of the staff go to Kubo with ideas.
Yeah.
Like so much of the staff go to him and they're like, hey, I have this cool idea, and a lot of times they say Kubo will approve it. They're like, that's a great idea. Like, totally do it.
I like it. Added.
Yeah, so we don't, you know, we don't even know necessarily if Kubo was directly involved in this or if, like, some, because once again, it was also revealed in that same fireside chat that we went to that Bleach has been around for so long now that there are fans working on the show.
Yeah.
So it's very well that there's, like, a super dedicated fan working on this show, and he's like, hey, I had this great idea for setting up the Uryu reveal later. He's like, what if he knew? Like, what if he knew all around?
And we all could,
like,
along.
We can hint it in the book and, like, set it up. And Kubo's like, that's fantastic.
He's like, yeah, you guys just did a lot of work
he's
for
like,
me.
He's like, send it. Like, that's great. I just think this is a perfect culmination of a show being so successful and so beloved, which obviously Bleach has always had that kind of story where Bleach was gone for 10 years and the fandom carried it.
The fandom
purely kept it alive through Bleach Brave Souls and a couple other Bleach mobile games.
Every person counts.
Over and over and over, and just demanded Bleach anime, Bleach anime, Bleach anime. Even though Thousand Year Blubber wasn't, you know, entirely loved, it had a heavy, heavy demand for people saying that they want this
to
come back.
We needed the wrap-up. We needed the closure.
And people have been saying that for ever. And now it's come to the point where the show is so beloved, it finally came back. Fans are working on it. Fans are helping decide what extra content to add into it to help fill out the later parts of Thousand Year Blood War. It's perfect.
I can only imagine, right? Like, they have a super secret meeting where Kubo's like, all right, this is the Soul King's name. Like, a week later, an intern runs in and goes, okay, you know that scene where Uryu's looking at the book? What if we just put his name right here? And Kubo claps and goes, do it. Do it, do it.
Hey, make sure you guys hire this guy.
Well, I just feel like that is not what I would think of a Japanese workspace from everything that I've heard, where it's just like it's so cutthroat, mm-hmm. you know, respect the boss, don't do this, you know, you have to stay until the boss leaves. I feel like that is not how I'd envision a Japanese workplace where you have the option to like go to the author. Like, I would never expect that, where it's like, yeah, a lot of the staff go to the author and give them ideas. I'm like, that's cool. That is so cool. That's like that, you wouldn't even see that in America. Being that open and like having, you basically have an open door policy. Yeah. That's cool. That is so cool.
It just like, it also kind of like, I don't know. It all of that reminds me a lot of like Kubo just even talking about how his name was in big block letters and right next to Ichigo. And he was just like, honestly, thank you. That's like, that's touching to me. Like, absolutely love that.
Well, I know he didn't despise it or anything, but we all know Kubo was pretty unhappy with the anime, you know, the art style changes, some of the pacing. So I think, I think he's just so happy it's back. He's like, oh, I'm down. I will be at this studio 24/7. Hit me up.
Yeah. He just has a house built into the studio.
I really do hope that that is the case. I truly believe it is, but I am manifesting it that Kubo is just like, he's just genuinely, because you know, think about it, it was 10 years for him too. You know, 10 years, he was off doing whatever Kubo was doing there in those 10 years, having a great time with his fan club, answering questions every once in a while, and then is own show comes back because so many people demanded it to come back, and it is so popular both overseas and in Japan now, where he has like full access to do whatever he wants, and he just loves it. I hope he loves it.
I hope he's loving it. I mean, just like he says, he loves getting fan art of all of the characters.
Well, that would
stuff.
Be one of my things where like if that was me, if I put myself in Kubo's shoes, I would just be so happy. I'd just be like, this is great, this is awesome.
My life dream would be fulfilled at that point. It's like you created something that the world loves.
He had to wait 10 years for it, but it eventually it came back.
Off. It's just like Anakin Skywalker. Yeah. Forgot the actor's name.
Oh,
you saw Hayden Christensen.
Hayden Christensen, thank you very much.
You saw that clip?
Where he was crying because everyone gave him a standing ovation.
Dude, I was misting up at that. I was going, oh man, I'm so happy.
He straight up said, he's like, you know how to make a guy feel good. He's like, damn.
Yeah, it is like that. It is really like that. Where, you know, he waited and paid off. It was good. Yeah,
it was fantastic.
We can see Happy Kubo. Just look at him playing Rebirth of Souls.
Yeah, true. That guy's living the dream.
Sensational.
Also, I guess, update for Rebirth of Souls as of October 19th. Still no Renji.
Still no Renji, but we do know it's coming out early 2025. Mm-hmm. Is what we do know. We do have a semi-release date for it.
Now, I hope they stagger the release months because I don't want to have to buy that and Monster Hunter on the same month.
Ooh,
that's a rough one.
Because like Monster, one of these games is going to devour my life, and I can't have that happen at the same time.
You can't have an internal battle going on.
I understand. I get the feeling.
It'd be Zangetsu versus Hichigo all over
again. All
we
over
just
again.
Can't live through that.
Oh, here's some bullshit. This thing made me angry for no reason. It had no reason to make me angry. When Yunouichi said, "Let's go get him," she called Chad Sato.
What? She not allowed to call Chad Sato?
No. His name was Chad.
She's being respectful, I mean, Pisces.
Does everyone call him Chad?
Everybody calls him Chad.
Yoruichi is respectful.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
She's showing her high nobility.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I think Kisuke calls him Mr. Sato at some point.
Yeah, that sounds
there
about
you go.
Right.
There you go.
But that is the future Soul King. He is only to be referred to as Chad or
Chad
Mr.
Rayo?
Chad. Chad Rayo,
I mean,
yes.
I mean, listen, Chad rushed in. He punched the Soul King. He saw how dangerous it was that he didn't even use the Almighty. He knew that he had to block it with his own hand.
Yep.
That's how dangerous Chad was. Really, what it was, once again, was just Yuha being disrespectful, was just being completely disrespectful, and was just like, yeah, I'm not going to use the Almighty. I'm just going to block you guys. And then not only that, he lights them all on fire, but not only that, he shoots Chad from the flames into Ganju.
Yep. That three-piece combo did not work out.
No. No.
We'll get a better one later.
I do like Ganju did the classic sand in the eyes, though.
But it was cool because, you know, he's like, oh, shit, his freaky eyes can see everything. But let me make let me get the pocket sand ready. Yep.
His eyes can see through realities into the future and into the past. You know what's going to blind him? Sand.
That would be your move.
Like, Ganju, like, come on, man.
On.
Like,
fuck his creepy
at least
eyes.
Rub it in his eyes or something. Like, really go for it.
Dude, Yuha did not give a fuck.
With bringing back to, I think it was your comment from last episode, Sam. Why is Ganju here?
Yes, yeah. It makes no sense. Like, it would have been so funny to me if Ganju hops in, does a smoke screen, it cuts back, he's fucking gone.
Like, he's like, hello,
like,
Ganju?
Nobody
hello?
Knows where the fuck Ganju went, and there's just a cutscene of him hauling ass down. He's like, goodbye.
He's like, gotta write down every passage for my sister.
No, he's using the Joestar's family secret technique of running away.
Yeah, which really would have been in character for Ganju. That would have been great.
But I do like the bravery that he's done.
He's very brave, but like the one fight he's ever been in was him running away from Yumi Chika the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would be perfect for that.
Oh my God, they repeated that, but now it's Asken and Grimmjow.
Yeah, 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 that'll happen. Well, Asken's whole shtick from the time he
he's just
was
run
running away.
Away.
Like, that's his whole shtick, which he does on purpose. You know, it's a little different, but Ganju was shooting from the hip in his fight. Holy hell.
Asken is just a Looney Tunes character put into Bleach, and I love him so much.
I love him. He's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sam, I have something I want to address to you, because I feel like this core is doing the thing that you wanted the most.
Okay, hit it. What did it?
You complained last season about the pace is breakneck. They're not spending time on anything.
Yep.
I am holding the manga in my hands. We're on episode 3. I have gone like maybe half a chapter in.
That's perfect. That is perfect, and I'll tell you why that is perfect.
Before you say it, I'm not complaining. I think it's great. Now pop off.
Okay. The way they are doing it is so good because they are still sticking to the manga for the most part. All right. There's a lot of the lab scenes that have been moved around, and I'll talk about that when we get a little bit later in the podcast. But they are adding more stuff to it. So a lot of the stuff in the anime or in the manga that was so quick, like honestly, the Ichigo versus Yuha fight when it happens in the manga was one clash. They like clash swords and that's it. That's like all you see. And then it goes straight to the talking and the whole thing where Ichigo cuts the Soul King. They have improved it so much and really weaved in. They've not only added anime only scenes, which are like cool. And they're not only standalone. They tie back in. So an example, Ichigo and Yuha, when they're fighting, they go into the shrine where Iruzo Sando was. Mm-hmm. And that ties back into new other anime-only scenes. And we see so much new stuff. And even this things like, I feel like people have for a while wanted to see more Retsu. We get more Retsu in this
definitely
one.
Definitely a lot of
we
it.
We see the part, the switch of Retsu to Kenpachi. I love
Oh, you saw
scenes.
That?
I think
you saw that?
Yeah.
I think they are so, so cool. And they are so well done and thoughtful. And I feel like if you even compare part 3, we're only 3 episodes into it. If you compare part 3 to part 2, I think we are in a different ballgame. I think like this Pierrot film change, I don't know if that's what's responsible for it. I don't know if it's the change of the director that's different now. But something is different in this core. And I don't know if maybe it's Kubo being way more involved. But it's so good. It's so, so good. We've had 3 episodes and I've loved them all.
It feels like it has room to breathe.
Yeah, 100% does. Yeah.
Sam from last year, your prayers have been answered. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think, you know, I would like to think that that probably got its way back to the studio as well. But we kind of thought this was going to happen, right? When we were talking last time in Core 2 Bleach Boys, we were talking that they it feels like they are rushing through this part to get to the end. And we kind of thought this was going to happen. We kind of thought with the way they were going through Core 2, they were going so fast, so fast. Like, a lot of people thought the Kenpachi fight should have been 2 episodes. Okay. Like, that is a thing that was said over and over again. It should have been multiple episodes. Now they are really taking time because we're getting to the part where stuff got cut. We're getting to the part where there's more stuff that really could have been input into the manga, but Kubo himself was working at breakneck speed. So now they're like, this is perfect. And what is happening, we're really meeting on a nice little middle ground where they're like, okay, now we have all this time to improve. We're going to go back and make this nice little middle ground. It's working out really well. It's working out really, really, really well.
So happy.
Now let's take a nice little mid-episode break here. Throw the eye catcher on the screen. Now we have 3 episodes of Bleach Sausage and Blood War, part 3. Let's rank which we like the best.
Which episode?
Which of the 3 episodes we like the best, which one we like the middlemost, and which one we like the least, all right? You guys need to think about it for a second, or you guys got it locked in?
Yeah, I need
to
think.
Okay. Jose's got to think for a second. Pythies, you got it locked in? Is it easy choice for you? You got to think.
I got it locked in, and I think we're going to be surprised.
Because it is going to be a little bit interesting of a choice, because episode 1 has a lot of stuff from the back part of the last finale, but it's kind of new stuff. There's a new scene with Ichigo and the gang inside of the rocket doing some explanation. It's all the Blu-ray scenes as well that they put into there, which is very, very cool. And then you get the finale, which is obviously awesome, the way they adapt to the Almighty. Episode 2, 8 minutes, pure anime-only fight content through and through. Ichigo versus Yuha, Ichigo destroying the Soul King. Ukitake scenes in there as well, of him healing Kenpachi. Really, really cool stuff that happens in there. And then, obviously, see the episode we just watched, but half Ukitake, basically half Aizen. So what is the best episode of the core so far?
I will go first. I'm going to start worst and then go and then work my way up.
Okay, do one at a time. So do your worst and then we'll give our worst and we'll go around.
My worst, shockingly, and I hate it because this is going to make Django happy, is episode 2.
Okay, yeah, love it. Yeah. Explain.
This is going to be controversial because I have conflicted feelings. I don't find Yuha to be a particularly compelling villain. And as much as the fights were cool, anytime he talks, I get a little bit bored.
Okay.
And that he talked a lot in that episode.
Okay, now I want to address the point that you said. So you don't find Yuha particularly compelling. Now, what's interesting is in episode 2, they added stuff to make Yuha more compelling. And I really like the stuff that they added. And reminder, you guys obviously know it, experts here. Wink.
Yeah.
So they added stuff in the anime that basically explains Yuha's whole dilemma with the Soul King and the fact that the Soul King is this all-powerful being. He has the choices to do whatever he wants. He has the power to do whatever he wants. Instead, he decides to hold the world together. And then he's seen all the futures. He's seen all the past, just like Yuha. And he still continues to fuck the Quincy's at every single time. So he sees that. And obviously, we get those flashbacks. I believe it was at the beginning of episode 2. We see the Yuha flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And we see him, like, watching the Soul King, kind of make the 3 realms, and then he gets washed back into reincarnation and sent back out, only to be part of the worst race that gets roasted over and over again and abandoned by his father. So he's rightfully pissed off, and he's like, you know what? It's not even like, hey, I hate everybody. I feel like he doesn't necessarily come at it from a point of hate, but just like, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to remake this world because this sucks. Like, you do a horrible job at it. I'm going to take all your power. I'm going to restart the whole 3 worlds, and we're going to go again. I dig it.
Now, here's my thoughts. That's character motivation, and it's a really, really good motivation. But I think himself as a character, Yuha, he's just kind of like a guy with a mustache who's kind of a dick.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that one as well. I feel like that explanation and him being a character with a mustache is just kind of a dick would be more relevant to the manga version of Yuha. I feel like more and more as the episodes go on, I think we will get more and more explanation. Like, I mean, even the stuff when he was fighting Ichigo in this episode, he's like, why are you fighting me? Like, let's get this done, you know? Yuha is coming from a place where he's like, it's not necessary for you to fight me more. He's kind of like, I've won, you know? It's like, stop it. Like, I'm going to go ahead and redo it. I like it. I like it a lot. And you still got to think that also this Yuha is like a little bit like Zangetsu to Ichigo, where like Ichigo's like, man, this fucking sucks. Like, I got to fight Zangetsu. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think they are doing better, but I see what you're saying.
So that's going to be my once again, all of Bleach is great, and I still like Yuha, and I look forward to the dumb shit he's going to do later. But just because I hate it when he's talking, I don't like it when he speaks. I'm like, oh, he's doing villain monologue. So that's gonna be my
I
worst.
Don't know. I kind of like when he goes on a tangent. It's like it's the tone of his voice and how he projects it.
That it's really Zangetsu that we've known since the beginning.
But it's just like, but him as a villain, I'm like, goddamn, that voice is actually kind of badass.
I mean, hey, it's got nothing on the butter that's Aizen. Yeah. It's got nothing on the sweet, sweet butter that comes out of Aizen's mouth.
That man can put me to sleep with lullabies.
That brings up the issue of Aizen is so sassy, everyone else seems boring in comparison.
Because no one can compete with Aizen. Yep. Come on.
Except Chair-sama. Except for Tokunata, guys.
I hate that bitch.
That bitch. I
hate
that bitch.
But
that bitch.
As much as we hate Tokunata, he was the only one to get close. You know, here's the comparison. I'm going to go back to My Hero Academia.
Yeah.
Okay, Aizen is like All Might, and Tokunata is like Endeavor. Okay, he was the only one actively trying, whereas the rest of the villains slash heroes were the ones that are like, oh, we'll never catch up to Aizen. We'll never have that. Tokunata was like, I'm gonna get that bitch.
He was just, in a way, he was just more of a fucking dick. He gave me more reactions than everyone else.
Well, he was more cruel. Yeah. He was more cruel, right? And we saw more cruel things from Tokunata, so obviously, like, we would kind of have that gut reaction. Anyways, Jose, worst episode so far.
It's hard. I really loved all of them, and especially when we got to see him on Sunday, all back to back to back.
This is the part where Jose butters you up before he slams down your favorite episode.
It's gonna say number one. I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna say number one.
Okay.
Nothing terribly wrong. I absolutely love the scenes with Udyo and everything. Those were so fantastic. And I'm a Ishida hater. Everybody. I don't know. It's just like I got too much of a recap. Didn't mind it, but everything else has just been a lot more content giving us, and I'm a fan of a nice fight, so you know number two was fine.
All right, worst episode for me. Drum roll. Nobody do a drum roll. Jose, do not do a drum roll. It's gonna hit on the mic. Okay. I'm gonna go episode two as well. I'm gonna go episode two. I just feel like from a perspective, I think episode one. Obviously, we only got half of a new episode, like Jose kind of alluded to, which is a little bit of a hate to see it. But if you guys all seen the tweets also, where they're talking about how the Almighty was activated on the 9-minute mark, which is also hilarious and I love. So we got the full recap. We got new scenes from the Blu-ray, which I love. They touched up on it. We got those new scenes that I related to in the Rocket when the Ichigo and Gang are talking. But the way that they handled the Almighty when it was activated, I thought was so cool. I said it when we watched the episode. I loved when they did the stop frame and then they moved it to like a new reality. I thought that was the coolest way that you can. Also, don't forget, it's been a while that we talked about it. I am right in the dick on that Udyu fight that happens with when he's fighting the Hollows midair. So oh good. My God. I love that.
That was my favorite part of that, episode.
I thought that was so fluid, and I really thought that set the tone to me when I watched episode one. That's like, okay, we're different. We're different. This is going to be some shit now. So I can't hate episode one. Episode two, although it had really good scenes into it, and we had really cool parts with Ichigo, I love they were zooming around the Soul Palace and doing all of that. I do think it was a little lackluster at the end. I did like the fights, and I like they were zooming all around. I had problems with the gang, as we talked about, and Ichigo's humiliation, getting slammed through the fucking thing. But incredible episode two, but I still think it's my least favorite of the ones so far, and that's even with episode one being half a recap.
Number two?
Do you want to go number two, or do you want to just go for the number one?
So let's go which one you like, the middle of the road, because I feel like that'll be the most boring.
Middle of the road is going to be number one.
I would slam dunk that as well. I'd say number one as well.
For me, it's number two.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the only one you got, dog.
the fighting is so good. The Almighty activation was insane. I love they did it at the 9-minute mark. And it felt worth the wait.
Well, and I feel like they really flex their muscles right at the end as well, because we get the Elsa walk where it starts zooming in a fucking circle. And we've already seen the Ichibei CG part also when he does the anti-reincarnation move. But that also was really well done. You know, had we not seen it before, that would have been crazy. The Ichibei dance is in that episode as well. Love it. I think there was a lot in episode.
That dance can be meme forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like there was so much in episode one that is so iconic, and will be obviously like Ichibei getting splatted, which was the only part of the episodes that my fucking fiance remembered, was when Ichibei got exploded.
She laughed.
That's just so funny.
all of that was just so good. And I feel like they knew it was episode one. They knew they had to come back with a bang. Really flexed their muscles on it. So I really do think that is the second most. But I would, to allude to all of our picks being episode three for number one, I think we have talked about before, and even Jose, before the anime even come back, we're talking about our favorite scenes that are coming up. It should be pretty clear that we love the characters. We love, 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 love the characters. So it shouldn't be a surprise that episode three is the one that has the most character interaction in it. We're like, yeah, let's go.
There's just something magical about seeing all your favorite characters interact in a room, right? And then especially with what's happening to Ukitake at the
Love Espresso drip coffee and cold brew? With the Ninja Lux Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Lux Cafe.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
As Mimi Hage is just like not ripping through his body, but just like shooting out of him.
And I like that you can kind of also relate like this Ugatake and the Kiraku when they became friends, where like, you know, that classic thing where it's like, oh, this is how quickly boys become friends. And all he did was ask to see some sweets. Yeah. And they were besties so for life. Good. They went to get candy together. Besties for life.
He's like, oh, most people ask me for girls, but you asked me for candy? Mm-hmm. You must be badass.
Love it. And then, of course, we get Return of the Aizen, the Cherisama, all of that stuff. How could you not love it? It's so good. Did you guys see online that people are freaking out that Aizen was going to look bad before it even came out?
That's dumb. That was a still frame.
Yeah. It was a still frame. It was a leaked still frame. And people were freaking out that they were going to like disrespect the Aizen scene, that it wasn't going to be good. It was going to be horrible. I had people asking me, like, hey, like, is the Aizen scene good? I was like, yeah. Like, it's good. And I'm like, we talked about the podcast 1-to-1. Last podcast, I have 1-to-1 adaptation. There's nothing wrong with that scene.
I wrote that down in my fucking notes. I found one thing that was different. When Aizen says, oh, they'd really, those goddamn bastards from 46, they'd really seal it off forever just to keep me out. What a bunch of shitheads. And in the manga, when he says that, it zooms in on his mouth, but in the anime, it zooms in on his eyes. That's it. It's even a side profile.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's just how, like, I feel like they know Aizen is the goat of Bleach, and they know that people love Aizen. They're like, I'm sure whoever's doing the Aizen scenes is like, their hands shaking the whole time. Like, oh my God, all right. I can't fuck this up. It's like, I'm going to be roasted if I mess this up. So I'm sure they're taking the Aizen scenes with the utmost care. But
it's just, that scene was so cold right after he releases the ankles. What was it? The left eye.
Yeah.
And then the guy comes in, he's like, I got to bind him down. And his arms just get splattered. And I'm like, oh, that's so
cool. How cool was it in all of the Mukin, right? Aizen just appears in front.
Yes.
And even shoots, he's like, God, that should have been impossible. How did you do that?
Holy fuck.
I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
He's like, I just released your mouth. What the fuck?
Like, imagine, right? Aizen, he is in the maximum security. He's strapped into everything you can think of, right? You put in one key so you can talk to him, and he walks out of the shadows like it's nothing.
Yeah. And isn't like the Mukin also like infinitely large and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. So like, who's to say that Aizen wasn't just wandering around and hauled ass to come back to Kiraku? Like,
hold on.
Like the whole time Kiraku was trying to talk to him into the depth and he wasn't responding, he was like all the way bumfuck on the other side. He was like, oh, a couple miles away. He's like, I gotta come back.
Also, the anime like cleared up the scene with that one dude who gets roasted. I always thought Aizen attacked him, but like, no, he just got too close. Aizen's spiritual pressure is that tough; it fucked up his hands.
Yep.
And he's like, you know, it doesn't like seal it; it just keeps it close to me.
Yeah,
I like,
love it.
Oh. I was like, oh man, that's so cool.
I was like, Chair-sama, why do you gotta be cool?
And I like that Kiraku, just like while he's watching it, he was like, whoa, don't act on your own. Then he's like, oh, it's too late. It's gone.
Yep.
Like, even Kiraku is probably like, probably not gonna reach in there myself. It's like trying to grab something in front of a shark or something. Like, it was let that guy go.
That gave me like heavy like OG Willy Wonka vibes of like the kids falling in a row.
Yes,
No,
yes.
no. He's just like, no, stop, don't come back, checks, watch.
Don't do
Yeah.
it.
Don't eat the chocolate. Don't touch. And he's
No.
like, definitely don't dive into the chocolate tube. It's like, oh, okay, there it
Oh
goes.
well, you did
Yep.
it anyways.
Oh well, no, you fell through the chicken. Oh well, you're a bad egg. Fuck it, we don't care.
Yeah, great scene. Real, really, really good. So, I mean, all in all, obviously, we love episode three here. I think that's a slam dunk.
It's the best. Like, what else could it be? I was straight up gonna put like episode one is my favorite, but I was like, the 7 minute recap, despite it being cool, did kind of kill it for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely down points for the 7 minute recap because obviously I would have preferred new content. I think that would have been the best, but I still think they handled it as best as they can.
And once again, like the 9 minute mark being when the Almighty activate is so cool.
But hey, it gave us that Udyu scene,
Yeah,
which
and
is
I
fantastic.
think they kind of look at it from a way like, okay, if you're watching Bleach on TV and all of a sudden Bleach returns, you kind of need the recap. You know, it's
Yes.
like here's because it left off right in the middle of a fight, right in the middle.
And let's not forget, we are all weird super fans that have been doing a podcast about this. I'm staring at my manga collection right now. Like, for Jim Bob, who's like, yeah, I watched that show once last year, I guess I watched an episode. He probably needed that recap.
Oh yeah, for
Yeah.
sure, for sure.
So let's get into some sad shit. We're gonna get into the old man Yama thing.
Ooh, favorite part of the whole episode, which probably makes it my favorite part of Thousand Blubber Part 3 as a whole.
Dude.
Now, have you seen? I'm gonna cut a little bit ahead to what the same scene, a little bit further ahead. Have you seen people talking about the Ukitake and the Retsu exchange as it being a nod to the Hell Arc?
I don't believe that's true at all.
Okay, thank you, Pythies. Thank you. I've seen so many people. I think it's people being excited, and I think it's people wanting that to be the case. And obviously, with what we know now with the Hell, where it's like captain level people don't go into reincarnation. But I think that was a nod. Well, I guess here's the discussion that needs to happen. Do you? Well, they don't. No. Okay. All right. I answered my question. I'm gonna say what I was gonna say. Do the captains know that they go to hell after they die? Which they don't, right? We find out they didn't know that. They don't know that until Xylaparo appears and tells them in the Hell Arc. That is like part of the reveal where everybody's like, oh.
Shunsui kind of knows, but he's the lore guy. He's always looking shit up. And he kind of tells them, but he's like, yeah, I heard a rumor.
So would you say that Ukitake and Retsu at this point would know that they're going to hell?
I feel like Retsu, due to her crimes, feels like I probably should go to hell. But I think this is two old soldiers, old friends, both knowing, but not saying, we're gonna die.
I took the scene as that as well, is that it was these two people. Obviously, we know Retsu 100% knew she was gone. Like, she got summoned into Central 46 with Shunsui. She basically got told, like, yeah, I'm going to make him fight Kenpachi. And she knew what her job was. She knew exactly what was going to happen. She has seen Kenpachi since he was a kid. She knew what she had to do. And I think Ukitake, obviously, when he talked to Urahara, or well, it wasn't Urahara, but it was Rukia. And he was like, yeah, I knew this moment was going to come from the day I got saved. I knew I was going to eventually have to do it. And obviously, with everything that's happening with Yuha, I'm going to have to do it right now. It's going to happen. So he also knew at that time, my time has come. I'm probably going to have to do this for the Soul King. I think that was exactly what it was. I think that's the best way to describe it is what you said, is it's just two old soldiers. They're like, we're going to die. We,
Acknowledging.
we've had a good time. And then it was kind of like, Ukitake's, I'll see you soon. Like in the afterlife, I'll be right behind you.
Because it's like, timeline-wise, I don't think Shunsui had that conversation with Retsu yet, but I feel like they all kind of knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, and I would, my headcanon, there's no knowledge of this at all. So this is not canon. I'm just gonna say this is how I would see it, is that Shunsui probably did not know much about the hell portion of it until after Thousand Year Blood War, because Thousand Year Blood War is when a lot of people close to him started dying. So I assume that would be when Shunsui, like Yama and like Chojuro and all that stuff, he would start to look into that a little bit further. Obviously, he wouldn't have the time to do it mid Thousand Year Blood War because he's in war mode. But I think after the fact in the peaceful times, I think that is when he would start really looking into it and kind of figuring that out.
How gnarly would it be? Hell Arc happens, our team invades. You see Chojuro there. And he finally gets to shine.
Now, I'm gonna assume you mean how gnarly, as in how fucking cool would
Yeah,
that
like
be?
how
How, yeah,
badass.
oh,
Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yes, sir.
How
yes,
cool
sir.
That scene's going to be.
Because even when Yama was taking the hit, this is a famous scene, mm-hmm. so I'm sure you guys all remember. He was taking the hit from Chojuro's Bankai that had been stolen. Even he's like, I know this isn't the Bankai that you perfected. Yep. So we'd finally see the Bankai that was perfected by Chojuro and see how good it was. I want Chojuro to take out like fucking 5 days. Oh, I want him to do the reverse of Ichigo when he showed up to save Rukia from the fire chicken. I want that to be Chojuro this time.
Oh, you
want give
him
a few lieutenants
and
knock out. I want him to fight all the lieutenants at the same time and be like, I'll show you the power of a super lieutenant.
That, but he's just beating up Ichigo.
Dude.
He's doing
the exact same way.
The same way.
He yep. uppercuts him.
Well, no, it's the same way. And then he rotates into fight number two where he does the Grimjo on Ichigo.
Oh,
when he
just
first
starts
down,
punching
just starts
him.
Mollywopping the fuck out of
him. Ichigo's like, I've felt this before, damn it.
Instead of the punching, he's doing like rapid thrusts with the rapier.
Yes.
Just
back to Sombra again. Let's not forget that Shunsui is defined by loss of his father and his mother, and then his brother, and then the woman that he loved. Mm-hmm. And now, with the death of Yama and Chojuro, Uketake and Retsu, he has lost everybody that he's been friends with forever. Now his closest people are, like, work compatriots and, like, his niece. I feel like you're right. I think that would be the perfect time for him to be like, what does... I heard a rumor about this hell thing, this burial. Let's look into that a little bit.
Yeah, and I feel like someone would probably tell him, like, hey, have you done the burial rites for Uketake? And he's like, huh?
Hello?
And he's like... yeah, the burial rites. You got to do them for everything. And he's like, okay. Shunsui wouldn't just blindly go like, let me do this. He would then look into it and see what's going on. But once again, I swear, the big part of the Hell arc was Isla Parle being like, you guys didn't know you were sending your people to hell? Like, that was the big reveal.
Well, I feel like, you know, captains have died before. Like, you know, Ginrei died. You know, all the other previous Kenpachis have died. So, like, I'm sure he has attended captain funerals. But I assume at this point he's like, I got to do a bunch of these at once for all my friends. I should look into this.
Yeah, and I think now he's more in the position of power. Where before, like someone like Yama, for example, would be like, this is tradition. This is what Ichibe has always told us that yep. we have to do. So I'm just going to do it. Where someone like Shunsui would be like, okay, let me go ahead and pull
Why
up the text.
Are we doing
let me
this?
See what's happening here. What happens when I do this? What is the wording here? He would look into it and figure it out.
I mean, at this point, if we take Can't Fear Your Own World, which once again is now dubiously canon, he has now seen what the fuck is up with the Soul King. He probably wants to know
yeah.
how stuff works more.
So, have you guys seen, and this, don't take this as an actual tweet. This could be fake. I haven't done any time to research into it, but I'm going to regurgitate it here. The Can't Fear Own World author put out a tweet today, and he said that it had been confirmed to him that when Yuha did his thing and he shook the three realms, Hell was not affected.
I can't see Hell being affected because it's so crazy.
So that's he put out a tweet and he's like, hey, that's what it is. And I saw a lot of people talking about it. The only thing that's a bit dubious is I have not confirmed that Twitter account is actually the Can't Fear World author because I've just never seen it before. And I just saw people talking about it right before I came on. But let's for a second pretend that is the case, which would make perfect sense. And it leads into the question, would it, like when Yuha, let's say he remakes the world, let's say he was successful, right? He redoes the whole thing. Hell would not be affected by that. Hell would be a whole other thing that would be its own because it's not affected by anything. And he also said that all the stuff that's going to collapse is the Dongai, the Soul Society, you know, the human world, Hueco Mundo. Never mentioned Hell. Never mentioned.
He didn't mention it.
Hell sounds so cool in Bleach.
And also in Camp Fear and World, wasn't there a thing that like back in the day? So this is Tokunaga explaining the rumor of
how
the Soul King became to be a thing.
Fuck
that
bitch,
Tokunaga.
Thank you.
He was explaining how he had heard it to be the case. And wasn't like Hell like back in the way, way olden days when the Soul King was still a person. It was just like this pit that just existed. And that's where the hollows came from.
It was a Spartan pit.
It was this pit, and there was just a bunch of bullshit that was on top of it, like the primordial chaos and shit.
Yeah. So I think that would go to say that before there were three realms, Hell was already there. So it's like this extra special, like it's always existed. It's always
it's
here.
Always been there.
And then they made the three realms with the Soul King stuff.
That's really interesting if that's how it is, because I forgot. Like straight, like we did. I will have to go rewatch that video, but I'm pretty sure Hell is just a thing that's always been there.
That's what I am thinking as well. But if you want to know for sure, check out our Can't Fear the World Bleach Boys podcast out now.
Damn.
Yeah,
I'm
getting kind of good at this.
And also subscribe to our shitty Patreon.
Correct, at patreon.com/weebsguild. Hey Jose, did you know that you could get 15 extra minutes of Bleach Boys off of every podcast exclusively on the Patreon?
No way. What do I have to do?
All you have to do is go to Patreon. patreon.com/weebsguild. You're going to see three tiers there. You can choose to become a Weebs Guild recruit. You can choose to become a Weebs Guild member or a Weebs Guild captain, which would mean you go to hell when you die. So be careful with that one.
Hey, the captain's meeting.
So you do get the additional Bleach Boys captain's meeting, which is the exclusive 15 minutes that we talked about. Last episode, we talked about exclusive Kubo questions that were asked at the Fireside Chat. This episode, who knows what we're going to talk about? It could be anything. But it's coming every single week. And also, if you are tier one, which is the Weebs Guild recruit, you get the Bleach Boys podcast the moment I'm done editing it. Before anybody else, you get to enjoy the episode. You also get exclusive polls, behind the scene content, and you get unedited, uncensored live reacts every single week as well, where you can watch the full episode with me every week. There's good stuff on there, boys. Check it out. And of course, we thank you guys for your support as always.
I don't know what his reacts are like because he won't send them to me.
Did you mention the Discord?
And if you join the Patreon, thank you, Jose, you get exclusive. There's an exclusive Discord Patreon only channel there. We talk about all things Patreon. Jose, Pythes, and I, that's probably the only channel that all three of us are active in at the same time. So that's exclusive in itself that you get to talk to Jose. That's a whole tier. You could talk to Jose in Discord. He's never in there. So join now. You get exclusive access to the guy with sunglasses. We were talking the Shunsui, the Ukitake, and the Retsu scenes. I nailed it that time. Now, we saw the ones where they're in Squad 1 Barracks and they're looking at Yama's poor broken sword, which, hate to see it, you know, really sad.
I love when Kyoraku goes, hey guys, can you guys give me a minute?
Love it. I love it.
It's almost like I need to compose myself real quick and just, you know.
I think in that moment, Kyoraku was kind of sensing the weight of the world and he was like, this is brutal. And, you know, like we talked about, I think Kyoraku also knew that both of his friends were going to die.
Yeah.
I think he knew that moment was coming and he was like, I need my teacher's dead. You guys are gone, which we also see that he also kind of trained with Sasakibe. Sasakibe was very relevant. And when they were young, he's like, Sasakibe's gone. He's like, all of the old guard is about to be gone, you know? And he's like, I feel like he's like, this sucks. Like, I don't want to be.
He's the remaining.
Well, there's always a lot of people. And this is a true to real life as well. A lot of people say that you don't want to be the last of your friends alive. You know, like that sucks. True. Like, you don't want to be the last one alive. And I think that's what Kiraku's feeling right now.
Like, remember, not only are his friends going to die, but he's the one that has to give the order.
Yep.
He has to say, Unohana, you're cool, been a great mentor. Go get killed by Kenpachi. Please.
We need you to unlock his special ability.
Your death is more valuable than your life. And that's fucked. So I wrote down that shit verbatim. Old man Yama sure picked a hell of a time to die on us. I never knew giving out orders as head captain felt this horrible. If old man Yama were still alive, I'd never have to find out.
Do you think in that moment he gave those orders right then and there?
No, I think he maybe had a conversation later. Because after that, you know, he's like, give me a minute.
Jose could be right. I could see the timeline being where Kyoraku had his meeting with Central 46 with Retsu already. And then no, that can't be. Because by the time that we see Unohana in the Central 46 thing, she's already full Kenpachi mode. She's like in full murder mode, which this is the first time that we see her swap over to that. So I would assume this is the first.
I like to imagine this scene was like right after that second invasion. I guess it'll be the first invasion. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they're taking that 1 minute to mourn. And they're like, all right, we got it. We got to get shit done.
Yeah, kind of like in a shonen when like the character slaps his face and is like, all right, game mode again. Like, I think that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Then we get the scene where Retsu stops being Retsu and becomes Yachiru.
Love it. Love it.
Love it, dude.
I think it's one of those scenes. They only really say one line to each other, but I think it's one of those scenes where less is more and the expressions that you see where like even Ukitake goes serious mode. He's like, I'll see you soon. And then we see the swap in Retsu's eyes. When I was watching it, when that scene starts, she still has her regular eyes. You know, like it's like, oh, like she's talking. And then the moment you see her with Ukitake, it is full on Kenpachi mode.
Yeah, but she switched so quickly. Mm-hmm.
I had to rewind to just jump. I was checking like she's normal. Retsu's dead. We're back to Yachiru. That scene was so short, but it was so good.
It added so much to it.
What do you call it? It's poignant. It was poignant.
Poignant.
Yeah, that's what it was.
It delivered a lot, despite it being. Was that whole scene put together even 30 seconds long?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
All right, now before we get to Aizen. I guess I just want to say, since I was reading through the manga, the little scene we got with Ukitake and Rukia is infinitely better than the fucking nothing we got in the manga.
As someone who also read the manga, which I do every Friday, plug again, I read that scene and I was very surprised at how little and almost how like cold he was to Rukia in the manga. Like Rukia tries to sometimes help and he just yells at her.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit. Okay. All right, cool. And I get like, you know, he's stressed and he's trying to figure this out. Also, he's in front of a lot of people and he's doing this big sacrifice, but the scene in the anime is incredible. I love the callback to the Kaien moment as well. I love what they did there, and it looks like when I rewatched it the second time and I saw Ukitake get developed by the hand, he looks fucked up. Like Ukitake, dude, like he's bent over backwards. It looks brutal.
He's being possessed.
Yeah, it looks like it could be from the fucking Exorcist.
I mean, even when it shot out of his like orifices and his on his face, I was just like, damn, dude.
Yeah,
it looked so painful, and I was like, So for the longest time, when I read that in the manga, I thought that he died right then and there. But according to Soifel, like he's still alive, and that's how long that they have for the Mimihage to hold shit together.
So the way that I took it, which I think is very morbid, where Ukitake is gone, like he gave up all of his organs, like he is dying, like basically he is on life support. Like it's like you take him to the hospital and his organs are failing, actively failing, but he still has that brief moment where like he's still functioning for now, but eventually it's just gonna stop. Like his organs are just donezo.
Yeah, so like I thought at this point that he was dead and Mimihage was just shooting out of his body. Now I'm like, oh, it's even more fucked because he's still suffering. Yep. Right? He's not dead yet. Oh god, and I hate it. I hate it. That sucks so much. I hate that for him.
Yeah, but I mean, they did a great job of setting this up, and I think they could have potentially have been, I think, more direct with like, hey. Because they still set it up, like, look behind us if you guys are watching the video podcast. This is the death painting for Ukitake that we have up. Kubo sends one out for everybody that dies.
Very fashionably.
They could have really nailed down, I think, a bit more in the anime, like, hey, this is it for Ukitake. You know, they kind of left it a little bit ambiguous, I feel. Now, obviously, Soifan mentions the thing, like, how long do we have? Because Ukitake is not going to last long. But Ukitake going, I'll tell you later. And then talking about he's going to go hold, you know, the Soul King, and he kind of knew this was going to happen. There is a small portion of people that I think could take that as Ukitake is going to be okay. Ukitake could survive that. I think there should have been like a, hey, like idiot, like he's dead, you know, like maybe Rukia should have ran towards him and like the two other third seat people should have stopped him. But like, no, like he's gone. Like it's like he as a body is still alive, but Ukitake is gone.
Yeah.
Well, remember, we have a bunch of more people that still have to come to the lab, so there's always time for that.
True. We could get reactions of people seeing what the fuck. I mean, how do you explain that now? You just really
just walk in and you're like, yo, what the fuck?
Yeah, also, did you see the part, Pythes, where all of a sudden Byakuya is now in the lab?
Yeah, I saw it, and I was like, oh, man. And I was like, we found him.
He flash stepped
in. It's like a game of goddamn Where's Waldo with Byakuya, this guy.
Like, he just flash stepped in. He's like, oh, well.
Well, also, Yumichika's there. Which also he didn't get an introduction. He's right next to Byakuya. Where were they? What were they doing?
They're having tea and they were hanging out with the Schutzstaffel because they're still not here.
Yeah, they're still hanging out. Which we'll talk about this. We know that they are going to show up next episode, but we'll talk about that when we get to it. Let's not skip Aizen.
That's really fucking funny. Well, we mostly said what we wanted to say about Aizen. I guess I can add is the music that played while Aizen was talking was creepy as shit.
Okay, yeah, so this really was something that I got asked a lot. Right after I posted that, we went to go see it. I don't know who else. I think there may have been somebody else there that mentioned the music when Aizen was talking is different and was not treachery. And so I got asked a lot. It was like, was the music for Aizen different? Was it different? And I honestly couldn't remember. I could not remember the first time that we saw it. That was not something I was paying attention to. Also, it wasn't exactly very loud when we were watching it, which I love. I have sensitive ears. But it's not like I had surround sound headphones on. We were watching it in an auditorium. So whatever. It wasn't something that I was paying attention to. So when I watched it this time, I really did, and I cranked it. I cranked it so I could hear it. It was like some techno music that was playing while Aizen was talking. I was vibing to it, though.
Mm-hmm. I was just like, damn, this fits the scene just right now.
Now, I hope and I plead that that is not the music that's going to be played every time Aizen appears. I don't think it's going to be. I love treachery. I hope that is what happens. And I know Pythes, you're in that camp as well.
Such a good song, though.
I like the vibe for the Mukin and this exchange, and obviously it's a very like back and forth, so it's a little bit, you know, technically like you don't know what's going to happen. Thought it was cool there. Thought it was awesome. But please, 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 please don't ruin Aizen later. I want treachery. I don't want another Ichigo moment where we get the wrong version of number one playing. Please.
Okay, now let me sell you. Okay? This is the song that shows up when Aizen appears, and treachery is what plays when he fights.
Okay, done. Love
it. Yeah, 100% I'm okay with that.
Treachery is like when you search it, it's Aizen's theme. That's what comes up. Aizen's theme. You know, and it's not like it was somebody else's theme and Aizen took it. This has been Aizen's theme forever. All right. It's not like it.
Other characters have used it. I think Noitora uses it. It happens a couple times for the Espada, okay. But like this is the Aizen song.
Yes, and like that's what like that's all I was saying is that when you search it, it comes up as Aizen's theme. Like just like number one is Ichigo's theme. You know, that's what comes up.
Do you want it to play when he brings the Soul Palace down?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, how much would you guys hate if Treachery plays? I'm putting my own hand in my fist for this part because I just feel like this is a horrible idea. Treachery plays when Aizen gets ready to take down the Soul Palace. Naja Kube shows up and shoots him and stops the song from playing mid song.
I'd be so pissed.
It'd be really funny.
Fucking no.
Isn't he dead? Didn't we see him get hit by the ash wall? And I don't remember.
I don't remember if we got a death painting for him.
I don't think we did get a death painting.
Okay. I am kind of seeing the vision of a death painting for him in my mind, but I can't confirm 100%.
I'm going to look up not only that, did our boy Robert Acutron get one?
Before you look, Robert did get one, I'm pretty sure, 99%. Before you look, I have it in my mind's eye that Naja Kube does show up in the manga and shoots Aizen to control his Ryatsu.
Oh, he absolutely does. Like, he's in the manga 100%. I can skip ahead in the manga and find him right now.
Okay. Pull up Kubo's death paintings and see if you see Nanana. Do we find any Nanana death paintings?
I have found none, so I guess he's alive, unfortunately.
There you go.
I can't wait to not give a fuck about him.
So we would all hate that scene if it happened.
Oh, it's going to happen, Sam. I guarantee it's going to happen. You know what makes me feel better? I am staring at the picture of him getting shot by Basby right now.
That's the one I just looked at, too. Yeah,
that's literally what Jose just showed me. I mean, I don't have much else to say for Aizen stuff. I do want to say I love the poem at the end. God, Ichigo and Uryu both sing it.
Yes.
Incredible. And I love the visual of it swap from red to blue.
Ooh. I wish... the voice actors did that for us on while we were there.
That would have been
insane.
That would have been so cool.
And then I would have been like, huh, I don't even know what this is talking about right now.
There are two ways the next episode could go. And with the title for the next episode being The Betrayer. That title is from the chapter in the manga when Uryu shows up with the rest of the Schutzstaffel. All right. So they finally finished eating. Pretty much 100% that they show up. That's like... all but confirmed. Obviously, with the poem with Ichigo and Uryu, we can get that what we saw in the trailer with Ichigo kind of dodging Quincy arrows. A lot of people thought that was going to be from Ichigo versus Uryu. So I can see in my mind's eye once again, I see next episode still being all Yuha stuff. I think we go right back to the action. We're going to go all Yuha stuff. Now, my question becomes, if you guys remember the manga, if not, I'm going to spoil a little bit ahead for you guys. In the manga, Yuha basically absorbs Mimihagi like almost instantly. Like he makes Ukitake sacrifice a waste.
Yeah.
He gets it almost, I mean, so quick. I think they're going to pad that out with the Ichigo versus Uryu fight. I think they're going to insert something there and make it seem like, Ukitake lasted longer than what he did. And I would hope before, so it's kind of awkward because I think, I'm just going to say what I'm going to say and then we'll work out the kinks after the fact. I would hope that they then, before Yuha grabs Mimihagi again, they go back and they do the lab scenes with everybody showing up. Because I think you need everybody to be there for the part that happens after Yuha absorbs Mimihagi. I think that has to have everybody in the lab beforehand. So I would assume they do a big, like, impromptu Ichigo versus Yuha. We really get a lot, or Ichigo versus Yuha, Ichigo versus Uryu. We get a lot of new scenes there. I don't know where the episode would end. I have no idea. But we get that, and then before he's able to grab Mimihagi, we probably the episode after this next one, we'll go to the lab and we'll get all of the lab scenes.
But like, here's the question. What group of people do you want to show up? Because there's two of them.
So the group of people, so there's really one group that I want to show up, and then there's one person that I'm waiting to show up. Obviously, one group being the Visors, very obvious. There's a lot of character interaction that we're missing there, and obviously they have been going around helping out Kisuke, which is we already saw that they were here with Kisuke. It's just weird that they're not there. I don't know what their game plan is for the Visors going forward, because Think about it. I think
they've already showed up. They showed up a while ago in the manga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Thousand Year Blood War Part 2, remember, when after the gang got shot up in the rocket, they showed up. The Visored showed up. They were like, hey, where is everybody? He's like, oh, Yodoichi went up already. They're like, God damn it. And that's when we went straight, you know, to the rest of the Yuha Soul Palace. So where are they right now? Like, where are they in the Soul Society that they're just not there at the lab?
And then, you know, we have, you know, the smartest character in Bleach, Lil Toto, show up.
Yeah, is there just is there any chance in the world that they just don't have the Visors interact in the lab? Like, is that just something that we would even see?
They're going to cut it?
Maybe they could do more later on, but they should be here already.
Yeah, and then the other person I was talking about is Kenpachi. I still would really to see the Kenpachi scene. I've talked about it a million times and beating a dead horse here. I want to see the Kenpachi scene where he shows up and he wants to search for Yachiru. And then Nanao is the one that actually puts him into place. I like that as a character building moment for Nanao. I like that as a character building moment for Kenpachi because he actually agrees to stick around and help. He does have the gates shut on him and told him he's not leaving, but he does eventually agree, like, you're right, I'll leave it to my squad to search for it. I like both of those moments a lot, and I really do hope that it gets paid off in the anime. But it's just becoming, it's starting to become like awkward timing, and with how much stuff once again that they're kind of going to have to fit in. I'm very open to however they're going to adapt that content. I'm just super intrigued how they're going to do it.
I forgot about that Kenpachi scene completely. That shit's amazing.
Yeah. It's a great scene. So I'm just super interested in how it's going to happen. And then I'm super interested on what the Visors are even doing, how they're going to fit that in. Because I do think with the title of the episode, like I said, I think next episode is going to be all Shitstoffel and Ichigo and Uryu. And then I would assume if I was planning the season, the next episode is going to be the lab stuff, would be my guess.
Because like I'm flipping through the manga, like not only have the Visors showed up, Kenpachi is up and has already had this conversation.
Yep. Yep.
He would have had this conversation before Ichigo fought Yuha in episode 2.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't Kenpachi, though, mention Yachiru right after he beats Grimmy?
I mean, yeah, that does happen really early, but there's a part in the lab where he shows up where it is, like, hey, where's Yachiru? And, like, he's still asking for her.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it becomes awkward. I'm so interested how they're going to fit all that in, because I almost would say the amount of content that we get, the amount of character interaction, it's coming to be close to a full episode that we've missed out on of that.
And we're only in episode 3, though. That's the thing.
I know. So that's why I think you think about it. This is how I'm kind of envisioning this season to go. I think seasons 1, let's say episode, how many? We're going to get 13 episodes, 13 right? Episodes. I would say 1 through 4, maybe 1 through 5 is going to be a lot of action. I think that's clearly what they're showing, and I think that's a lot of setup. We did get a nice little break with the Ugatake episode that we got right here with the Aizen setup. I think that's a little bit of fan service, a little bit of treat for you guys. And then we go right back to the action episode 4. And then I think in the middle of the season, maybe the 3 middle episodes, we're going to get a lot of the character talking, a lot of the character interaction. I think we're gonna get multiple episodes of that happening. Obviously the stuff that happens with Aizen as well, saying that he's just gonna like shoot down the Soul Palace, whatever happens, that stuff I think we're gonna get, and I think we're gonna get multiple episodes of it in a row. And then I think they're gonna finish strong again, and it's gonna be action all the way at the end.
Oh, it's gonna be so nice.
And then so you asked this last season, so I'll ask it now. Where does this season end?
So here's what I was watching. I was watching the opening, right? And when I was first watching, I was like, oh my God, this is all kind of in order. Like, I was watching like the stuff with Kiraku, and then we got Yuha versus Ichigo right at the start, and then we got Kiraku going down, we got Ugatake showing Mimihagi, then it showed Grimmjo, and then it hopped back to Aizen. So it was not in order. It was really quickly. But I was watching, I was like, you know, I was like taking notes. Like, okay, so obviously Grimmjo and Asken's got to happen. We get the reveal of Nanao's swords. That pretty much, Nanao's sword being revealed is pretty much at the end of the Lobaro fight, like, which is crazy. Yeah. That's like towards the very end. So that's going to take multiple episodes. Now, the key art that they showed for the premiere was Basby and Yugram. So we still have to get Basby versus Yugram, which is also crazy because there's a huge backstory that happens in that fight.
Fit that in.
I know.
We really are running out of time.
There's a huge backstory there. And it's like, I love the anime only content that we're getting, but oh my God, like I'm shocked at how much stuff that they have shown in the intro that we're somehow going to get later down the line.
We still got to get Mayuri.
It's going to be packed.
Holy shit.
It's going to be really, really packed. And in the manga, there, Mayuri also shows up like right after the whole Yuha cutting the Soul King thing happens, which should have happened about now. He shows up and they're talking about the gate in the manga, and Urahara's like, man, we still don't have enough Ryatsu for the gate. And Mayuri's like, well, why didn't you just ask? And he's like peeking through the hole with Nemu. He's like, you could have used my Ryatsu multiplier, and like opens the window. And Urahara's like, oh my God, I had no fucking idea you had that. And that's where he shows up and also helps. That also hasn't happened, you know, but they did allude to this episode, right? They did mention that they don't have enough Ryatsu.
Yeah.
That was a conversation that happened. So I do think that we are going towards that direction. They keep mentioning the gate, which is good and promising, but I have no idea. I have zero idea where this is going to end.
Maybe we'll be getting a bit more action, and then like the gate is going to be like a way bigger deal.
I think it's going to be. I think it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big concentrated effort. I mean, that's also something that you see in the opening. Again, everybody holding those orbs. And it's like everybody's holding there. Kenpachi's there holding the orb. Everybody's holding the orb. So I do think it's going to be a much bigger deal. And I think we're going to get at least, my call is two episodes of like pure character interaction that's going to happen right there.
Okay, I could see that, definitely. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely not going to get the Gerard fight at all.
No, that's got to be season four.
Yeah, that's got to be right at
some
the end,
right?
Some
people are asking me, and maybe this is a question that I will ask you, Pythies. Where, like, do you think we will see Ichigo Horn of Salvation at all this season?
No, I
don't think so.
People were asking if that is something that could potentially happen towards the end, if we'll get some sort of Horn of Salvation.
I feel like
I thought that was like end, but my memory is not good enough to confirm that.
I forget it is either the first time that he tries to fight Yuha or it is the last time, but I think we'll probably get that beginning of season four. And then we'll get it for real at the end.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't familiar enough with the content in the manga that far. And I was like, I just told him I have no idea.
I don't want to say we'll end it the same way we did Core 2. But because it's in the intro, I kind of want to think that like Nanao's sword is going to be the last thing that happens.
Would we like that though?
That would not be that good of an ending. I mean, the reveal, yes, but...
If that's the fight that ends the season, I think it could be okay. Like, Leibaro is such an asshole with his sniper, and he does take out a couple people. If they really make him an issue this season, if he is just taking dudes out left and right, taking him out as the end is like the, you know, the small victory you get at the end of this core could be a good way to end it.
Well, I kind of feel like, so you think about it, right? Season one ended in a very uplifting manner with Ichigo getting his true Zanpakuto, right? That's how that one ended. It was beautiful. It was lovely. Great. Core two ended also with a semi-positive note towards the Soul Reapers that Shinjimaru had won all of her fights and Ichibe had kicked Yuha back down. Obviously, we know that wasn't the case, mm-hmm. but you can see where that would seep. Do we want another positive ending for the Soul Reapers, like some sort of hope? I almost think that this should end in a spurt of despair. I think
Ooh,
this should,
I like that too. Revenge of the Sith kind of thing.
Revenge of the Sith, or the classic Empire Strikes Back.
Thank you. That's
Empire
one
Strikes Back.
Well.
That was famously one of the ones that people like the most, or let's say Infinity War, right?
Yeah, Infinity War. That's my favorite of the two.
It should almost be some sort of despair, which maybe that ending, Pythies, is Lilibaro, you know, capping a couple of people. Maybe that is the ending where all things are looking crazy. Maybe we get Gerard going, you know, ultimate immortal mode, and that's maybe we see the power-ups of all the Shitstoffel and how much more powerful they're being, and that's what we would get. And I think maybe that's what people are hoping for also with the Horn of Salvation Ichigo. I think that maybe they're hoping they see the first time and it kind of he gets whomped, mm-hmm. and I think that's kind of what they're hoping for, but who knows.
Well, you know, one of the coolest like just parts of the Fate Karakura Town is when all the Espada kind of release their Ryatsu and all the colors flash, and it's super
Yep.
Like, I could imagine sick. All the fights are going down at the same time. And then, I don't know, something happens and they all just pop. And you kind of see the colors explode. And then, boom, into season. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that'd be cool. Now, if Horn of Salvation does happen, and now I'm totally... Guys, this is big spoilers for the manga if you guys don't want to know. If you guys are still hanging on by here, I respect you and you were trying to avoid spoilers. But... I would personally love, and I don't know where this fits into the timeline because once again my manga knowledge towards the end is horrible. I would like Horn of Salvation Ichigo happens, right? He gets roasted. It's like it wasn't even a fucking effective. He gets whomped. Yuha's like deuces and leaves, right? That's towards the very end. I remember mm-hmm. that happening. And then after credit scene for the whole season, okay, end credit, very, very end, is the Ginjo and Tsukishima showing up. And they're like, oh, yo. And then that's the end.
That would be pretty hard.
Okay, so that, but I can do it better.
Okay.
Okay, okay. Right,
I'm ready. Pitch, I'm ready. Pitch. That was the rough draft, everybody.
Yeah. Did either of you ever play Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time?
Love Prince of Persia. Yes, love it.
Great game.
Okay, so you know when you'd fall in the pit and die, and then you'd hit rewind? Mm-hmm. You'd have Yuri Lowenthal.
I'm already seeing what you're putting down, Mikey. I'm already seeing what you're putting down.
Yeah. Yuri Lowenthal will go, no, no, no. That's not how it happened. That didn't happen, right? You see it happen. The sword breaks.
Yeah.
And then you see it. You see that scene of it breaking reflected in the bookmark. The bookmark becomes a sword. And then you see it being stabbed into Ichigo. And then the season ends.
You're giving me chills.
Damn, that was fucking hard. Yeah.
That is the official Bleach Boys ending of season 3.
And the ending of this episode. Holy fuck.
That is it. That is it. That is incredible. We have a couple more things to talk about this episode. But, boys, that's going to go exclusively to the Patreon. If you guys want to check out the exclusive 15 minutes, it's called the Bleach Boys Captain's Meeting. Patreon.com/WeavesGuild. Of course, if you guys can't afford it, you can't put it down. I totally get it. But with that, that is the end of the Bleach Boys podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Now, I am interested to know if you guys watched the whole episode. This is your first time viewing. Please let us know in the comments down below, what was your favorite part of the episode 1 and what was your favorite episode of Bleach Sizing Blower Part 3 so far? Please let us know in the comments down below. I'll be in there reading them. I want to know what each of your answers are because I think there's 3 good episodes that each have 3 different answers that you could go for. With that, guys, please make sure to leave a like and subscribe, and we will see you guys next time on Bleach Boys. Goodbye, everybody. As always, thank you so much to our Weebs Guild Captain members, PV. Thank you for your support, and we will see you guys in the next Bleach Boys.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.